This week on Best in Show, the 95th Academy Awards happened. We were there along with everyone's moms, and we are taking you into the press room with The Blacklist's Kate Hagen. Plus, we find out which way Letterboxd members voted. Hi, and welcome to Best in Show, a limited podcast series brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. I am Mia Vicino, the West Coast editor at Letterboxd, and Best in Show is all about award season. Throughout the series, we've looked at noms and gongs, snubs and surprises, and we dug into the Letterboxd data around nominees. It has all been in service of doing what we always do here at Letterboxd, celebrating cinema. And here again to celebrate cinema with me are my Best in Show besties, Hollywood veteran, and our editorial producer, Brian Formo.
I come in peace.
And our editor-in-chief, Gemma Gracewood.
I come in pieces. I got home pretty late last night.
Also on our team, outside in the broadcast van with their cheese cubes and drip coffee, are our resident fact finder, Jax Fax, and the man with the tape deck himself, our editor, Slim. Thank you, as always, to these silent gents. Soon, we'll have friend of the pod, Kate Hagen, senior vice president of The Blacklist, joining us for a full download of what went on in the press room. And later, we'll all talk about where all of this history fits into Letterboxd. And by the way, next week to close season one of Best in Show, we're doing a mailbag recording, so send us any award season questions you have, either via email or voice memo to podcast@letterboxd.com. Okay, now Letterboxd goes to the 95th Academy Awards.
Hi, I am Mia Lee Vicino with Letterboxd, and you keep mentioning how important mothers are in your speeches. And my mom has told me that you're her hero, and now you're a hero to, you know, all these little boys and girls that look like us. And I'm curious, what is something that your mother told you or gave you that you've carried with you through this journey?
I think mothers are very important to all of us, because if without them, none of us would be sitting in this room to start off with. But the most important thing is my mother has always instilled in me confidence, taught me about love, taught me about kindness and compassion. I'm not very, very good at that at times. And actually, the recent thing that she asked me to do is don't wear pants to the Oscar. I think what mothers do is they're constantly reminding you to be better. And they do it with love. And they do it because they really want you to be better, so you have more opportunities and you will have a better life. And that for them is their ultimate goal.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You just heard our own Best in Show host, Mia Vicino, talking to Michelle Yeoh moments after her historic win for Best Actress at the Oscars. That was a moment hard fought for, and my little Best in Show bestie has come so far.
So far.
Mia, I'm so proud of you so far, but we'll get to that. We'll get to that.
Oh, it was an honor just to be looked at by Michelle Yeoh, truly.
I would have felt honored to be stepped on by Michelle Yeoh.
Yes. Oh, yes, we will indeed. So it was less than 12 hours ago that Gemma and I fell into a cab with our heels in our hands, replete from a long day and night of celebrating cinema in the heart of Hollywood at the Dolby Theater, no less, where Everything Everywhere All at Once was crowned Best Picture, Best Director, Best Screenplay, Hottest Editor, Best Catering, Best Rap Party, and Best Historic Acting Win. And Sarah Polley became a newly minted Oscar owner. Yay! Oh, Canada!
The enthusiasm is just what I needed. Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. Their wins were not just historic for Michelle Yeoh, being the first Asian woman to win Best Actress.
Which, okay, by the way, I just have to say, it is ridiculous that it's taken this long. 95 years, in fact.
95 long years. But we got there. Yes, we got there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lots of history was made, including the fact that this is also, it's just the third film to win 3 acting Oscars, but it's the first to also combine that with Best Picture and Best Director wins. So wow. The previous three acting Oscar winners were A Streetcar Named Desire and Network, which we talked about on the show. But Ilia Kazan and Sidney Lumet's films lost the top prize to An American in Paris and Rocky, respectively. But Everything Everywhere All at Once cleaned house in the above the line categories, including not just what we mentioned, but a best original screenplay as well.
Yeah, in the Best in Show Slack, Jax Fax pointed out today that in Everything Everywhere All at Once, there's that scene where Alpha Waymond is teaching Evelyn how to access the multiverse, and they're confronted by Deirdre Bobedra, who goes into sumo wrestler mode. You know the scene I'm talking about. And so that's a three-hander scene where all three actors won Oscars for their performances, which has never happened before. In Network, Beatrice Straight shared her one scene with William Holden only, and in A Streetcar Named Desire, Carl Malden basically never crossed paths with Kim Hunter. And if they shared screen time, it was in a group situation, not significant dialogue exchange between them. So that scene in Everything Everywhere All at Once is now historic, and it was for a slapstick action scene. So good. So good.
Yes. And the slapstick comedy was raised with editor Paul Rogers, who won the Oscar for his masterful assembly of Everything's story.
Yeah, he talked a bit about the editing of the comedy being completely tied to the drama of the characters, you know, as it always should and as it always works best when it is. Paul Rogers also won the Twitter Oscar for hottest editor. It was very funny to watch that going down during the show. Lots and lots and lots of chat about this lovely tall man. But what I found most interesting was the light that he shed on the production environment of Everything Everywhere All at Once. It's been really evident that this was a happy production. And he described how working on a Daniels set, there's no yelling, no screaming, no fights, and how that starts at the top with them. He also told us that they, all of them, used their tickets to bring as many crew members as they could to the Oscars. So there were about 60 crew members there last night, which is kind of unheard of for a production to do that. It's a real like hot ticket for producers and above the line people to bring their families, basically. So that's just so cool.
Well, another fun fact about the hot editor, Paul Rogers. You know, Everything Everywhere All at Once has been winning awards for a while now, but he was the first member of the crew to win an award. Almost exactly a year ago when it premiered at South by Southwest, Paul was given an editing award at the festival, which, you know, Time is a Flat Circle is happening right now as well.
The second members of the crew to win an award were the Daniels themselves, and that award was one they awarded themselves. It was a butt plug trophy that they quickly scribbled handwriting on when Everything briefly jumped to the top of the highest rated films on Letterboxd just under a year ago. They were suitably humble and silly about it. They knew it wouldn't last. They were like, this is not better than Parasite. This is not better than The Godfather. But what has lasted is the incredibly strong community love for this film. From the first moment that the first review appeared on Letterboxd after that South by Southwest premiere. And I mean, I was watching, I was online covering what was happening at South by Southwest for our editorial. That buzz was electric. It is a strange and wonderful thing to run an internet product and be able to feel history being made through those ones and zeros. And so, you know, as a team, we recognized that our community was grabbing hold of this fanny pack supremacy representation. And we jumped in and we made that googly eye Easter egg, which you only get once you log the film. And things continued from there right through until A24 released the film on video around mid-year and just kept on going. And really, at this point in my little speech, I just want to honor all the Letterboxd members who embraced the Daniels early on. And we're talking pre-everything. We're talking Swiss Army Man and their music videos. Because you are the ones who helped propel the film into the wider consciousness and into its history-making Oscars victory.
Yes, yes, that is right. We here at Letterboxd are taking all of the credit for this Oscars sweep.
And that was a sweep, and it was, but it wasn't just a sweep for Everything Everywhere. Mm-hmm. It was also a sweep for A24. So with those three Everything Everywhere acting wins and Brendan Fraser's performance in The Whale getting him Best Actor, A24 became the first studio to have all four acting winners.
Whoa, facts. Brian with the facts.
Brendan's prosthetics artist also won makeup and hairstyling, so the Oscar, which was given to him...
Sorry, just my personal opinion slipping out there in a reaction. carry on.
Yeah. So the Oscar was given to Brendan by Jessica Chastain, who was last year's Best Actress winner for The Eyes of Tammy Faye, which had achieved the same feat of pairing makeup with lead. So that's 2 years in a row for that, which, I don't know, maybe some feelings.
And in fairness to the Wales prosthetics artists, they did invent some technology to make that fat suit. It was COVID times. They couldn't actually do the makeup testing on Brendan. So they were like, is this the moment that we're going to use this 3D printing technology we've been talking about? And they did. So good on them. Whatever. They moved technology forward. That's exciting. Can we like have
yes,
a
that is the best
hiatus?
Use of the technology. Well, I would like to share that my favorite non Everything Everywhere All at Once related win was Sarah Polley's snagging Best Adapted Screenplay for Women Talking.
Yes!
Yes! Especially when she thanked the Academy for not being too offended by the words women and talking together. That was very funny. And I loved that tux.
I loved her explanation when she was asked, you know, why did you choose to wear this? And she's like, oh, I don't like to be cold and I don't like my feet to be sore. It's just like, it's that. That's
same,
the Emma,
girl.
That's the Emma Thompson taking off her heels to go and get her BAFTA moment. I loved it.
Y'all are talking Sarah Polley's tux, as you should, but I also want to bring up Rooney Mara's buttoned band uniform that she attached over her white gown for this, and she like changed during the ceremony like a transformer. I loved that look. Here's a nice fact from Brandon David Wilson, who is on Letterboxd. All Quiet on the Western Front has now lost the Best Adapted Screenplay Oscar twice to a lone woman screenwriter. In addition to Sarah Polley winning this year, Frances Marion beat it in 1930 for The Big House.
Women are writing. Women are writing.
Women are triumphing over war.
I don't know. All Quiet had a pretty loud night regardless. It won 4 Oscars. For cinematography, production design, score, and international feature, predictably beating my beloved Quiet Girl. Just a note on cinematography, though, James Friend, who was the DP for All Quiet, he was stunned to win. And in the press room, he apologized for being a bit inarticulate. It was really lovely to see a winner like that. I mean, I think, you know, he was alongside Roger Deakins. I don't think he was expecting it. This is a man whose filmography has a lot of low-budget horror and genre films in it. But I would say that's exactly what prepared him extremely well for a mammoth war film and propelled him to the Oscars. And
Star Wars. He's doing Star Wars miniseries next.
So James Friend also at the press conference said, I don't think I'd made a good film before this one, which yeah. was very endearing and funny. And when you look up his filmography, it's very not, I'm not knocking any of his other films because I haven't seen them, but it is very funny to see all of these films, you know, that you haven't really heard of and then All Quiet on the Western Front.
No, I agree. And I would say it's a roundabout win for genre film, just like Jamie Lee Curtis winning Best Supporting Actress. And she made a point of thanking all the fans and filmmakers of genre movies in her speech. And I just think that also the Daniels kind of with Swiss Army Man represent genre a bit. So it's really maybe one day a really good scrappy little low budget horror will win Best Picture. Who knows? Anyway, All Quiet's 4 trophies make it the most Oscar winning Netflix original movie, beating Roma's 3. And I can hear Roma fan Slim throwing things around the broadcast van right now. Sorry, Slim, but you know, All Quiet. Can't beat it.
Cheese curds everywhere. that also makes All Quiet the most Oscars won by a streaming title, a single title, since Coda, which was released on Apple TV, also won 3. So Netflix also won Best Animated Feature for our friend, our best friend, best in show bestie, Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio and Mark Gustafson.
Yeah.
So big night for that streamer.
It was so good. It was a big night for cinema, as the Oscars usually always are. Nicole Kidman would be so proud of the people who came to this place for magic because there were Oscars given out in the categories that cinemas are perfect auditoriums for. Visual effects went to Avatar, The Way of Water, and sound went to Top Gun Maverick.
Oh, bow, yes. Bow, bow. I'm sure Nicole Kidman is very happy about that Top Gun win. So we've talked all season about how we don't dabble in predictions. Well, okay, we dabble a tiny, tiny bit, but mostly we're all about hopes and dreams. So speaking of Nicole and heartbreak feeling good in a place like the Dolby Theater, tell us which hopes and dreams triumphed and which, if any, were dashed.
Well, as I've said, The Quiet Girl dashed. And then Todd Field's script for Tar dashed. One day the world will know how badly Todd Field was robbed for his masterpiece. Tar is a singularly magnificent work of script, and Lydia Tarr is one of cinema's greatest narcissists. And Tar was one of the best comedies of 2022. And I don't know, I just feel like Todd wore his best hat and for nothing. And
he has a lot of hats.
He's got a lot of hats.
A lot of hats to choose from, and that was his best one.
Yeah. What about you, Mia?
Well. My Colin Farrell dreams were sadly dashed. They were dashed bad. But as I mentioned, my Sarah Polley hope triumphed. So that helped buoy me.
How about you, Brian?
Well, early on, we talked about how the Oscars are sports for movie lovers. And I, as the resident sports person, I can say, like, that's very true. Because when things don't go exactly the way you would like, which is pretty much how every sports season and Oscar season goes, you're left pondering why you devote so much time to do these things. But then you snap out of it because it is fun. But there is that existential crisis of what am I doing? Why do I pay so much attention to this? I wanted to say that on an earlier episode, I said that I love a sweep. But when I was saying that, I was thinking more like the Titanic year where like all those crafts were won, but script and acting were spread among three or more movies. I would have liked to see a little more spread around here. So like in that year, LA Confidential, Good Will Hunting, and As Good As It Gets was able to place in some of those top eight categories. I'm wearing a Do the Right Thing hoodie as we record this. So it's just a reminder that like for anyone who maybe it didn't go the way that you wanted, that like most every movie that I love did not win an Oscar, or very few were even nominated for Oscars. But and Tar joins that club. And so
Tar joins the Down with Love club.
Yeah. And yes. But I don't want to sound too dour, so I'm going to quickly highlight three things. And this is, I should step back and say, like, I'm not saying that Everything Everywhere All at Once was not deserving of Oscars. I just wanted a little more love spread around. It's the community organizer in me of, like, let's celebrate more. But I did want to highlight a couple things throughout the ceremony that I really liked. The first being The Boy, the Mole, the Fox, and his first co-director, Charlie Maxey, said he was standing in front of a room full of brave and kind people. And I think that really shined through. So while I'm not in Everything Everywhere's camp, but the filmmakers and everyone working on it were brave in their art. They've shown kindness every step of the way, including in their speeches, including Jamie Lee Curtis, who shouted out the volume of laborers on Everything Everywhere. I also love Daniel Scheinert's shout out to the public school teachers and saying that he dressed in drag as a kid and it affected nobody. And I lived in Tennessee for a number of years, so thank God he said that.
Yeah. Okay. So just because you brought up The Boy, the Mole and Charlie Maxey, I wanted to jump in, and it's a little Best in Show surprise. But when they came back into the press room, Charlie and his producer, I asked Charlie, I got the chance to thank him for his beautiful book, and then asked what films or books had inspired him or given him the same feeling that his book and his film has given so many of us. And he talked about The Black Stallion. He talked about reading a lot of Asterix as a kid and Tintin. But then his producer, Matthew Freud, elbowed him aside, like literally elbowed him aside, and was like, no, actually, I need to tell you that the movie we bonded over throughout the entire making of this film was This is Spinal Tap. And I had a little gasp because I was like, Christopher Guest, who's in the audience crying as Jamie Lee, his wife, is accepting her award, and also made the movie Best in Show, after which this podcast is named. So that was just a little geeky moment I had in the room that nobody noticed at the time.
I loved seeing Christopher Guest on the telecast.
He looks so grumpy and like he doesn't want to be there all the time. And then suddenly he's in tears, and it's a beautiful thing.
What was your biggest surprise of the ceremony?
Well, a lot of movies went home empty-handed, but one that I was not expecting to go home empty-handed was Elvis. Like Everything Everywhere, this was a movie that survived months and months of reactions. It was one of the few non-franchise movies to make money at the box office, like Everything Everywhere, and it won a ton of precursors for Austin Butler, Catherine Martin, y'all's bestie, and a big one at the end for Mandy Walker, who was the first woman cinematographer to win the American Society of Cinematographers Award, but yet there is still not a woman cinematographer to have a competitive Oscar. Mm-hmm. I already talked about how bummed I was at the volume of shutouts, and I don't put Elvis into like on a high pedestal, but I did predict it to win three statues, so I was most surprised that it didn't win anything. But a positive Elvis thing, I liked seeing Angela Bassett link arm in arm with Austin Butler when his category was about to be announced, and I loved so many audience shots in this. It was so good to see all these people together. Cate Blanchett wrapping her arm around James Hong's when Jimmy Kimmel mocked his civil engineering. Show me an amazing actress linking arms with anyone and I was swooning. So
tell you what, I was swooning when the lovely chaps from An Irish Goodbye, which won the live action short prize, got everyone to sing happy birthday to their star, James Martin. And when they came through the press room and were asked about that, they explained that yes, the Oscars were important, but James's birthday was more important and that they wanted to make sure he had the best day ever. And it was just another example of kindness and attention and human love and empathy that was just kind of vibing in the room. It was so gorgeous.
I was also surprised that Elvis did not pick up any of those little gold men. I was also predicting that it would get something, maybe costume design, you know, or hopefully cinematography. That would have been very, very cool and historic. Maybe one of my biggest surprises was when All Quiet picked up production design. Especially over, I mean, it had such stiff competition, you know, like Babylon's in there, the Fablemans, there were a lot of heavy hitters. And then Elvis. This one won. And yes, exactly. And Elvis. And then All Quiet took it home. It was very, very surprising.
I have a theory about this, based on what I've been learning during this awards season from people like Brian, our insider, because we did actually get Isaac Feldberg to interview production designer Christian Golbeck just last week, because there was just a lot of talk about the opening montage of that film. And the opening montage is extraordinary and it's different. Very different from the original. And it's the sort of one time in the film you really see any women. And it's the journey of a soldier's uniform from one dead body back to being washed, stitched up, repaired, and then given to another soldier who will go on to become cannon fodder. It's incredibly moving. If you watch none of the rest of the film, you get, you know, the entire picture of the horrors of war from that opening montage. And I've just got a feeling that a lot of people turned on Netflix, watched that opening montage and went, brilliant. And it is brilliant. And the voting was based on that. I mean, I have nothing, no facts to base that on, but it's an extraordinary piece of production design.
You mean they didn't win for all the mud?
Oh. And the foxes. Yes, it had foxes.
I mean, it was part of the opening. Yeah.
Honestly, yeah. I would have voted for those foxes. I was kind of hoping the whole film was going to be about those foxes, but sadly it wasn't.
They're so cute.
Brian, do you have any closing thoughts on how this particular Oscars played out across the season compared to past Oscars?
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, I do think that people reacted very positively and strongly to a very weird and different movie. But there was something that I did see something similar, and I have a theory, similar to some recent Best Picture winners. I brought up before how Parasite and Coda campaigned with the entire cast, regardless of who was nominated, like an approachable billboard at all these gatherings and parties. Both EEAAO and Banshees of Inisherin had that this year, except with four acting nominations each. But something I hadn't thought of until last night, maybe because I'm dumb, but I didn't think of this until last night.
Brian!
But Parasite, Coda, and Everything Everywhere All at Once weren't just loved ensembles, but they're all playing families. So when they're all going around together at these events, not just as a beloved ensemble, but they're beloved kind of as the family unit. and how the ensemble resembling the messiness and hope of family can increase a warmness to a film overall. So all four of the acting winners were not shy about how meaningful it would be for them to win. And that actually goes a long way with a lot of this crowd. They want to know that if they're giving something to someone, that it's like appreciated. Mm-hmm. I actually feel like post-Slap this year was a big movie hug, basically, at the Oscars. And while we're all Tar defenders, lovers even, I am not going to move in for a Lydia Tar hug. So I do feel like this was kind of like a big embrace year to like movies that made people feel warm.
Okay, Brian, I'm sorry, this is so spooky. Because you weren't in the press room, but do you know that that's what the Daniels were trying to explain in one of their few questions that they answered in the press room was wanting to create in their film the feeling of a warm embrace at the end of chaos?
Maybe I'm not so dumb. But yeah, I feel like it's telling that like the heart-swelling Banshees moment at the Oscars was for quote-unquote Jenny the donkey. It wasn't really Jenny. But, you know, this season is so long. It's too long. You can feel the desire for warm feelings. And Everything Everywhere All at Once provided that, not just in the theater with an exciting new film, but also like everywhere that this cast went together. Mm-hmm. The last thing, and this is more to tease that we're going to dive into a little bit of South by Southwest next year, which is the film festival that Everything Everywhere All at Once premiered at last year. But next week, we're going to get into the winners of the 2023. I am most hopeful that like between this and Coda, that the release strategy of putting everything in the last 2 months and just bombarding people with hopefuls is like that is eroding, because that is something that I think is like been very detrimental to conversation about films in general, but also like just people being aware of where things are showing. And I'm so glad that a movie that came out in April maintained this all the way through.
But before we get into the next award season, let's look at what happens in the moments, not the months or years after someone wins an Oscar. It is time to go behind the curtain to the Oscars press room. There are so many elements to the Oscars, from the hardworking crew who build the red or champagne carpet, to the carpet event team who included Met Gala creatives this year, to the director of the show itself, to the broadcast team, the social media team, the stage managers, the seat fillers, and of course, the press. Without whom, nobody would even know that the thing happened, because a black tie event in LA is just a Monday.
So this year is the first year that Letterboxd has been an accredited member of the Academy Awards press, which meant that Mia and I had to get glammed up and spend the ceremony in a ballroom. Sounds exciting. Next to the Dolby Theatre. Still sounds exciting. Sitting at tables with our laptops, watching the show on screens with the little headsets that we could still hear the show on, while Oscar winners came through for press conferences with us and other members of the global media.
It is a very intimidating environment, and we were very grateful for the guidance of friend of the pod, Kate Hagen, Senior Vice President of The Blacklist, which is the platform for film and TV writers to showcase their scripts. The Blacklist publishes an annual list of the year's best unproduced scripts, and to date, scripts from the annual Blacklist have received 60 Academy Awards from over 283 nominations.
And Kate is also an Oscar tragic like us. And it's a tradition to have her on the Letterboxd show to recap the Oscars. So here she is. Hi, Kate. Good morning. Have you slept?
Hello, friends. I have slept. I made it to bed about 1 a.m. last night, which is pretty good. I'm usually pretty wired post Oscars. But I ate some midnight French toast after the ceremony, and then it was off to slumberland. But thanks for having me. It feels very, very strange to say that I am an Oscars press room vet, but this was the 8th year in a row that I have covered the Oscars from the press perspective, and it is always different. There are always surprises in store, and last night's show was a particularly great one, I thought.
Kate, you have been going for 8 years now, so I want to ask about this specific one, though. So which dream of yours were fulfilled at the 95th Oscars.
Okay, well, I have one very specific dream that was fulfilled, and then one that I thought was fulfilled, and then later on in the night we found out we were misled. I will start with my big win, which is that from the moment I saw women talking at Toronto in the front row of the theater, craning my neck upwards and just weeping into my mask for, I don't know, 70% of the movie, I was like, if Sarah Polley does not win Best Adapted Screenplay for this, I am going to riot. And there was a point in the ceremony last night where it looked like things were not going to go her way. And I was ready to not be very pleased about that. I will not drop a bunch of...
We were going to be throwing those tiny plates of cubed cheese all across the press room. Oh my God. And petty fours and cans of Sprite.
But she prevailed. I have been a fan of Sarah Polley since I was very, very young. She was on a Canadian TV series called Road to Avonlea that the Disney Channel would syndicate that I watched with my parents. And so we've been fans of hers for literally 30 years at this point. And I think she's a masterful filmmaker. Take This Waltz to me is one of the greatest films of the 2010s. And Women Talking is such a tremendous achievement. I don't know that it was taken as seriously as it should have been this award season. Go figure, based on the title and the subject matter. And so it was really, really great to see that film and Sarah Polley prevail when it looked like for a moment it might not be going that way.
I just got to jump in and say, because that, okay. So I have in the last 6 months had two instances, movie related instances of reaching across and grasping a fellow woman's hand and gripping it tightly whilst internally screaming. And the first moment was when I was watching Women Talking with my very dear friend, New Zealand's greatest woman comedian, Michelle Acourt. We were watching Women Talking together, and there is a moment in the film, everyone knows it, where you just reach out and hold the woman next to you, but you can't talk because the movie's still going, right? So you have to internally gasp and scream and cry. And the second moment was last night, when the winners of the previous category were in the press room doing their press conference, but we had our headsets in and we were looking at the screens, and Sarah Polley won. And the three of us just grabbed each other, and it was just like, you couldn't say anything because there's these beautiful winners doing their press conference. But I honestly, I've never held a hand as tightly as I held yours, Mia, last night. And I hope you still have feeling in your knuckles.
Oh, yes. We were all three in a row just gripping each other's hands so tightly. It was so powerful. Women gripping.
Women gripping. That's the sequel.
So we don't have all the time in the world, but I did want to touch on when Jamie Lee Curtis came into the press room and shouted out her daughters, including her trans daughter. And there was a little bit of a encouraging the idea of the abolition of gendered performance categories while acknowledging that women have worked so hard to even get anywhere near the top jobs in the industry. Abolishing such a category would be complicated.
I have a different spin on that I think could be effective. And I think if you degender the categories, that could be really fascinating, but maybe that's the point at which the Academy takes a note from the Globes and it becomes about a best dramatic performance and a best comedic or musical performance. Mm. And that way you've still got 10 acting slots and you may be privileged actors who get overlooked in comedies or musicals, or, you know, you could expand the aperture a little bit. But I think, you know, it's a good part of the conversation to keep in mind that women have worked so hard for these very small gains in Hollywood, and it continues being a push and a struggle. But I also understand the POV from non-binary trans and genderqueer actors of like, hey, there's no room for us in these conversations. Or like, you know, if we are in these conversations, it is suddenly the only talking point within the conversation. But I would love to just see a little bit more flexibility in the categories generally. I think that there could be some really interesting performances that would get highlighted that might not be able to be highlighted historically because they're not like Oscar worthy in the traditional sense. But I'm curious to see how that conversation continues evolving, especially as folks like the Gothams and the Spirit Awards have sort of moved in that direction too.
On that note, there were a lot of questions about diversity and inclusion in the press room. And I think it's really, really interesting because on the one hand, you know, it's so historic that Michelle Yeoh is the first ever Asian Best Actress winner. But on the other hand, it's like she's not getting to answer questions about the performance itself and her craft. She mostly has to answer about diversity, which it's just such a tricky thing to balance. Like, Kate, what are your thoughts on striking that balance?
It's really tough. I think, you know, as somebody who interviews folks and then sees it from their POV as well and sort of cringes when those questions get asked in an inelegant or perhaps not as thoughtfully of a way as they could be, I think it gets really uncomfortable really quickly. And I really feel for actors and creators and artisans who can't just talk about their craft, who have to talk about being the first or being the only or being the sort of avatar for an entire community. And I'm sure it's exhausting to have to sort of fulfill that role within a given community. And when you just want to talk about, but let me tell you about this cool puppet I made. Like, I just want to talk about this puppet or whatever it is. But at the same time, I do think we have to keep asking those questions because I do think that the progress is slow. The progress is taking a long time, but like, progress is absolutely being made. Things are changing. It is hard to fathom a movie like Everything Everywhere All at Once winning Best Picture even 20 years ago, I think. Mm-hmm. So it is a delicate balance.
It was really interesting, because when those five white guys, incredibly talented white guys for Best Sound came out to talk about their work on Top Gun Maverick, that is what they got to talk about, their work. They didn't ever get asked, so what are you going to do to make sure it's not just five of you this time next year? Really interesting, eh? But I remember you pointed out last night that Paul Rogers, the editor of Everything Everywhere All at Once, another, you know, handsome white guy, did actually talk about what it's like to work with the Daniels and how they were paying attention to who they were mentoring, who they were bringing on board. So he sort of voluntarily talked about it, which I think is, that's the work of the ally, right?
Yeah, it was really cool. He said, yeah, you know, this award honestly oftentimes goes to guys who look like me. That's
that's facts.
Yeah, it was just very cool to see him kind of bring that up on his own. You don't see a lot of that allyship in the film industry. So it was very, very heartening.
Speaking of how hard women have to work and women talking, let's talk a little bit about how hard you have to work in the press room to even get to talk to these winners. Being accredited media and being in the room is not a guarantee of being able to talk to the winners, is it? So Mia and I experienced this for the first time last night. We arrived, we got in, we found our seat, said letterboxed. It was very exciting. And then there was this card with a number on it. We're like, what is this? Kate, talk us through the mechanics of the press room so that we can understand and appreciate what happened at the end of the night for Mia.
Yes, absolutely. As Jamie Lee Curtis said when she entered the press room, what is this, an auction? Because it very much has that vibe. So you enter the Oscars press room, you find your seat on a very fancy wedding board, you sit down, you get all your tech stuff set up, and then every seat has a number, and there is a room moderator, and as each individual winner comes through, the moderator will announce who is coming through, and if you have a question for that winner, you raise your number, and then you cross your fingers and you pray that you get called upon. I have been lucky twice before. I got to ask Taika Waititi a question about Jojo Rabbit being on the annual Blacklist, which was very cool. He sang a little song about the Blacklist, which was a delight. And then last year, I got really lucky, even though I was so nervous I could have hurled. I got to ask Jane Campion a question about her Best Director win, one of the thrills of my life.
And this year, you got to sit next to another New Zealander. So, I mean, you know, and you're winning all around, Kate.
I tried so hard to ask Sarah Polley a question, guys. I like knocked over a water bottle standing up. and it was not enough. It was not enough. She was too popular and only got a limited number of questions. But that's kind of the fun of it too, is the sort of like waiting and seeing and being like, oh, I'm going to raise my number because I have a question for this very specific person. But
yeah, so I raised my number when Jamie Lee Curtis came through. So they took two questions and then they took a third and they said, and then we'll go to number 3, 2, 1, which was me. And I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. I've got my card raised. She was like the first or second person into the room. And then she finishes her previous answer and the moderator goes, I'm sorry, we're out of time.
Heartbreaking.
So heartbreaking. I was livid. I remember turning to both of you and being like, oh, this is unacceptable, unacceptable. Only made better when, because people don't really have questions for the short film winners. I got to talk to Charlie Maxey about what the boy, the fox, the mole and the horse means to me and my kids. So that was really lovely. But that sort of just goes to show, even when you get called, you don't necessarily get to ask the question. So then we arrive at the end of the night and finally, Kihui Kwan comes in the room and then Michelle Yeoh comes in the room. And Mia, what did you do?
Well, first I freaked out internally quite a bit. And then I jumped the F up when Michelle Yeoh came in. I was up there. I was raising my number. I was jumping around. I was like desperately trying to make eye contact with the moderator. Like, please, please pick me. Yeah, I was like climbing. I was ready. And it worked. My begging worked. And I got to ask the question. I was so excited that I started just asking it right away without the microphone at first. And I just started saying it. And then somebody handed me a microphone. And I was like, oh, right. I forgot the entire process because I was so excited. And then I got to strike my own balance of the diversity question / win question. And I got to ask about her mother and what the most important things that her mother taught her, because Michelle had been mentioning her mother in so many of her speeches and how this is a win for all the mothers, you know? So I got to kind of, and I also got to tell her that she is a hero to my mom. And my mom famously does not really have heroes. Michelle Yeoh is like the only one that she's kind of spoken about. So that really meant a lot to me. And then she gave me, my mom texted me a thumbs up react. That was all I got when I told her the news. It is Asian culture.
So like, I know this is Kate Hagen's interview, but I feel like the final question is, Mia, there were 300 accredited press from 50 different countries. You were one of them. You're an Asian woman in the room for this historic win. And you get to ask the winner this question. What does that mean to you?
Oh, man. It meant so much to me. I couldn't even process in the moment. I mean, like, it has taken 95 years for a woman who looks like me and my family to win this award. So, I'm still processing. It's very, very, very surreal that I got to be in that room for, like, my first Oscars and witness this history. I mean, what it means to me, I guess, is like what Michelle Yeoh said, where it's like there are so many like children out there who are going to see this and think like, oh, this could be a path for me. Because if you don't see it, you don't really realize that it's something that you can pursue. So I think that that's mostly what it means to me, is just like for the next generation of Asian people who want to be actors or make film. I mean, that's so cool.
Can we also brag a minute on Mia that as we were leaving the Oscars, we just got very fortunate to cross paths with Ki and Michelle. And Michelle not only remembered Mia, but thanked Mia for her question, because that's how good Mia's question was. So yeah, everybody else, step your game up to Mia's press room game. It was wonderful. Yeah. I don't know if you guys feel this way too, but it always takes me a long time to process. Like maybe like 3 days from now, I will really like get to the point of like, oh my God, that was amazing. But like you get home and you're a little bit like, what just happened? What did I just witness? Like, what did we just get to do? And so, Mia, especially, I hope you can take that time in these days and appreciate how amazing you were and what a cool thing you got to do.
Thank you, Kate. Yeah, it was very surreal to go from, like, Michelle Yeoh thanking me for my question to going home and eating 3 stale croissants in bed.
Yeah, yeah. That's no, I was literally, like, eating my midnight French toast in, like, sweatpants with, like, my eye makeup, like, on my face. Being like, Hollywood baby, this is the life.
I had half a roast chicken sitting cold in the kitchen, eating it by myself whilst, you know, writing up notes for today. Bliss. And looking around the Airbnb that is an absolute mess going, how the hell am I going to clean this up and get this 7-year-old out of here tomorrow? And then remembered that I'd been able to talk to Charlie Maxey about his beautiful book. And it just, yeah, it all comes home. And by the way, Kate, you're burying the lead about your little moment with Key.
Okay, I do have to tell this story. I will try to be brief, but I was obsessed with Goonies as a child in a period when my family was like very broke. One of the things I sort of begged for was we found an original Goonies one sheet at the Ohio State Fair. And it was like quite a bargain to get my parents to purchase this for me. And I was like a Goonies kid. And in the press room, Key had talked about, you know, the great Jeff Cohen story, the fact that he is his lawyer now and that all of the original Goonies had reached out to him. And he said, Goonies never say die in the press room, which I was very excited about. But then on the way out, I was like, oh, I have to say it. I have to say it to this man. So I said it to him and then he said it back. Goonies never say die is my theme of the moment. And I don't know, that movie has a lot of issues in 2023 terms, but I do think at its core, it's a story about the misfits and the weirdos and the kids who get overlooked 99% of the time. And to come fully full circle on that and the fact that a Goonie is now an Oscar winner, I think is just like a net good for the universe.
Every awards show has that moment after the last envelope has been opened, the last winner has passed through the press room, and the final golf cart has driven away from the tent, when we can kick off our heels, loosen our ties, and flop back in a comfy chair, pull out your phone and see what folks are doing on Letterboxd. That's right, it's time for the Best in Show After Party. And this week, we're having an after party on Letterboxd itself.
you mean the thing that we claimed won Best Picture for Everything Everywhere All at Once?
Yeah, yes. We did it. We got them all the way to the Oscars. We totally did it.
It was all us, nobody else.
All us. And speaking of the Letterboxd community and Letterboxd members, you know, claiming victory for things, Letterboxd member Darren Carver-Balsiger has been running the Letterboxd Does the Oscars Awards for the past 4 years. This year, more than 3,000 members created the nominations. They then voted on those through a Google form. Darren's accountants crunched the numbers and the results are in. Brian, bring it.
Well, first, Everything Everywhere All at Once won Best Picture and Director and a few other things, but we want to highlight some wins that went the opposite of the Oscars. And speaking of opposite of the Oscars, we've brought Slim in to announce it.
Thank you very much. What an intro. I'm back in the studio, baby. I just came out of the van, the FBI van parked outside of Brian's house, and I sneaked into the house to read these. My God, I'm so ready. Let's start with Best Actor.
Please.
Colin Farrell, The Banshees of Inisherin.
Mia! Yeah.
Yes, that's my man. That's my man.
Next up, Best Actress. I know Gemma will be excited. Cate Blanchett for Tar.
Yes.
My best friend.
Best supporting actress, Carrie Condon for The Banshees of Inisherin.
She's so good. She's so good.
Best adapted screenplay, Bones and All.
What the?
Horror.
Okay, that is an awesome pick. Thank you, Letterboxd. Yeah. I love you, Letterboxd.
Horny horror all the way. We love you. We love you.
Hashtag horny horror forever. Best documentary feature, Fire of Love.
I wept in the theater of that one. Woohoo!
Best international film, Decision to Leave from South Korea.
Yes!
Korea represent! out.
Letterboxd community makes a decision to leave, decision to leave in.
Yes.
This is good. This is good.
Best production design. The movie was 9 hours long. It's Babylon. Best costume design, everything, everywhere, all at once.
Mm-hmm. Shirley Caratta, genius. Shirley.
Best makeup and hairstyling, it's the Batman.
More Colin.
It's Colin. And it's all for Rob's hair. That is the sole reason, actually.
Nothing to do with the penguin. Absolutely nothing to do with the penguin.
Best cinematography, it's decision to leave.
Again.
I agree. Yes.
This one also feels like a very Letterboxd win for best sound. Nope.
Yeah, that was the biggest snub, I feel like, of all biggest, the noms, really.
Biggest snub ever. Woo.
And finally, best animated short, My Year of Dicks.
Yay for dicks.
Yay. We love dicks. I think.
A whole year of them.
A whole year. Look out. That was an audition to host the Oscars next year, I think, right?
Putting my name in the hat.
You got some banter.
Thank you very much, Slim. You may go back, all right, I'll go back to the van and your cheese cubes. You're amazing.
Do you guys have any trash you need to take with me out to the van? Yep. Maybe drop in the trash can on my way out, take some pizza boxes.
Yeah, I do. I've got you Charlie's fat suit from the whale, if you could just dispose of it.
Maybe somewhere. You could fire up My Year of Dicks on Hulu while you're waiting for the audio to come in.
My Year of Dicks on Hulu.
Slim's not the only cameo. We got another cameo. Once you come to Pasadena, everyone just keeps coming back. So Jax Fax is here, and he has an update on where Everything Everywhere All at Once places on the top 10 all-time Best Picture winners as rated by Letterboxd users.
Everything Everywhere All at Once now ranks as the number 6 highest ranked Best Picture winner of all time. The top 5 are Parasite, The Godfather, The Godfather Part 2, Schindler's List, and The Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King. Everything Everywhere did slip from number 4 to 6 in the past week, but all 6 of these films rank in our all-time top 25. And it's worth mentioning also that Parasite, The Godfather, and Everything Everywhere are 3 of the 4 films that have ever been the all-time number one narrative feature film on Letterboxd.
Now, the one other title that's been number one and not a Best Picture winner is current number one film of all time on Letterboxd, Come and See, a non-Oscar nominee. So, hey, look at that. You do not need the nude gold dude to be number one.
That's right, Mia. Lydia Tarr will always be my number one bad girl. Turn that Marla 5 up to 11.
I want a This Is Spinal Tap style movie, but about Lydia Tarr.
Oh my God.
Oh, wow.
Oh my God. I mean, she was wearing none more black. Her suit was none more black. She's, Oh my God.
I mean, Christopher Guest, if you're listening, we got an idea.
Think about. But last of all, Brian, our bestie insider, we just really want to thank you for all of your hard work this season, not least of which was your work on getting me and Gemma into the actual Oscars press room for our very first Oscars.
And Mia in front of Michelle Yeoh. Oh my gosh.
Ah. It was a wonderful moment, but Brian, you had your own moment too at the Oscar nominees luncheon, where the Academy team delivered envelopes full of Letterboxd love letters to various nominees.
Yeah, I did have that happen. That seemed like that happened so long ago, but it was only a month.
You had like 7 whole minutes with Lydia Tarr, Brian. We did not.
Oh, trust me, I know. But let's listen to someone who never got to get up on that stage last night because the Academy only awarded a few films. We all said Todd Field for Tar, right? Script?
Oh,
that's what we wanted? We wanted that. Yes. So let's hear him. Actually, let's hear him accept some Letterboxd love.
Here's the beautiful thing about all of this. Todd Field has no interest in easy answers. Tar is a movie that trusts the intelligence of its viewers, that demands attention to detail, and wants to start a discussion rather than tell you what to think or how to feel. Thank you, Mariana. Well, Letterboxd is a big part of our cinematic life. It's something that I read quite a bit and that I feel like I learn from.
Phew. Well, that's almost it for Best in Show. We have one more episode next week to wrap up this season and look ahead to 2023 as we recount what's already won trophies at Sundance, the Berlinale, and South by Southwest, and what might be coming for us at Cannes. And next week, we are doing a mailbag recording. Send us any award season questions you have via email or voice memo to podcast@letterboxd.com.
I have one question, Mia, but I'm not going to email it to you. Do we have enough time for a quick round of Player of the Season?
No, but let's do it anyway.
Wait, but it's your nomination, Mia.
That's why we're doing it anyway. That is why I'm making the decision we're going to go through. So my nomination for Player of the Season is Sarah Pauly for many reasons, but my main one is she has been highlighting below-the-line crew members on her Instagram. So she's been writing these beautiful, long, and detailed and personal captions about all of these crew members from, you know, from gaffer to key grip to on-set tutor and supervisor of the child actors to dialogue editor and just how much incredible work they put into women talking. I highly, highly, highly recommend checking her Instagram out. It is @RealSarahPauly. I just want to give you a little taste of her Instagram captions because I really, really do recommend checking them out. This is about her post-sound supervisor / dialogue editor, David McCallum. He made the scenes flow seamlessly between ADR and on-set sound, found imaginative solutions to impossible problems, took my stressed-out calls from set once at 6 a.m. on his birthday, and found a way through rain issues, accent issues, and an impossibly picky director's preferences and obsessions, as well as that same director's crisis of confidence during post.
She really is the best.
She really is.
Oh, what a great one. What a great one. And just a very, very, very quick sub-nomination for Deputy Player of the Season for Michelle Yeoh, who was the first person in the press room to thank the media. She told us that we made Everything Everywhere All at Once interesting. We made it wild and wacky for people who hadn't seen it yet and really acknowledged the role that media play in transmitting the message of a movie without spoiling it to people who haven't seen it yet to build that buzz and that excitement. And I just love her for that because, you know, media like to be thanked. It feels a little bit thankless sometimes.
So Michelle is giving us credit for propelling Everything Everywhere All at Once to the top. She said it herself right there. Interesting. Thanks so much for listening to Best in Show, a limited award season series brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. And don't forget, next week is our big mailbag finale episode, so send us any award season questions you have via email or voice memo to podcast@letterboxd.com. We are excited to try and answer them, especially if they're from our moms.
You can follow all of us and our HQ page on Letterboxd using the links in our episode notes. Thanks to our crew, Jack for all the facts, Slim for making us sound amazing, Sophie Shin for the episode transcript, Ryan for producing, and thanks to Letterboxd member Trent Walton for the music, and to you for listening.
There are times when you reach a certain age plateau where the producers say, "Well, what do you think? Can we risk it? Can we do it? Can we use them?" The other guy says, "I don't know. They look at younger ones. We can't make them look older, but this one, you know, it's kind of difficult." They forget, and then they ask you to do something, and it's one-arm push-ups. Best in Show is a taped up production. That's Jack Palance, City Slickers.
Funny, funny, funny. Speaking of old people and old things, we got through a whole show without talking about the fact that Hugh Grant said scrotum on the Oscars stage.
We are so brave.
Oh, we're still recording. That's in there now.
Yeah. Yes.
That's going to be in the, that's going to be the fade out.
Yeah.
This is a Tape Deck Podcast.